feet four. He fights with missiles and with spears. He's on 31 and he's only 17. He's been a soldier for a thousand years. He's a Catholic, a Hindu, an atheist, a Jain, a Buddhist, and a Baptist, and a Jew. And he knows he shouldn't kill, and he knows he always will kill you for me, my friend, and me for you. And he's fighting in Canada, he's fighting in France, he's fighting in the USA. This way, and he's fighting for democracy or fighting for the red. He says it for the peace of all. He's the one who must decide who's to live and who's to die, and he never sees the writing on the wall. But without him, how would Hitler have condemned him at Dachau? Without him, in a war, and without him, all this killing can't go on. He's the universal soldier, and he really is to blame. His orders come from far away no more. They come from him and you and me. And brothers, can't you see? This is not the way we put an end.
Bringing an end to war is certainly one of our goals on the New American Dream radio show. When Buffy St. Marie first sang that song, protest music was heard everywhere. Hundreds of thousands of students marched on Washington to protest an unjust war and also to remove inequities in the way that people were treated based on their skin color or their gender. The causes were important. The emotions were strong. The music was glorious. Where have all the flowers gone? Blowing in the wind. Freedom. We shall overcome. Not to mention somewhat rowdier ones like Country Joe and the Fishes, Fish Cheer. I was there in Washington for three of those marches. At least once there was a bus trip from my high school, Friends Central School in Philadelphia. Bus picked us up right on the campus of the school, took us down there. That was cool. Another time, I drove a van full of my fellow students from Wesleyan University in Connecticut, and we drove down. We enjoyed listening to Bob Dylan, Peter, Paul, and Mary, Joan Baez, Richie Havens. There were speeches, too, but it was the music that was most memorable. It was our very presence there was helping to make a difference. Was the numbers, the people, the caring, just an incredible outpouring of emotion. You know, during one of those trips, my mother and my uncle made a trip down there, too, to protest. But they weren't with me. They went down on their own. They got tear gassed right in front of the Nixon White House while I was enjoying myself listening to music. I'm sure there are a lot of family stories like that. But we were all just small parts of something that was much bigger. We made a difference back then because we believed in ourselves. We were not afraid. Not being afraid was easier back then when I was a teenager. You know, at that age, you're invincible, and you can't trust anybody over 30. I'm a bit older now. I'd have to doubly distrust myself now, that, you know, because I'm 60. But actually, I think back then it might have been easier to trust somebody that was 60 than somebody that was 30. I'm not too sure, but I'm not sure it matters either. The point is, we all got together and we all did something that mattered to us, and we did matter, and we made a difference. And, well, I got complacent, stopped caring so much about politics or wars, civil rights, started conforming. Well, I'm not sure I could ever say I really conformed. I never did get rid of my long hair, for one thing. A generation went by, maybe more. I didn't like what I saw, but I started being afraid to step up for the things I really believed in. You know, got to caring about, you know, whether my code worked that I was writing, you know, make sure I was going to still get my paycheck, all that kind of stuff. But, you know, we thought the country had changed. We'd won. We didn't have to fight anymore. And that's why we're in this big mess today. Because so many of us stood aside. So many of us thought that the evils of war and prejudice had been beaten down for good. You know, we hardly even noticed as freedoms were removed. We let our leaders lie to us. We didn't care. How bad could it get? We'd ended war in Vietnam. We got equal rights for blacks and women. Well, it's pretty obvious now. We were very, very wrong. We did exactly what they counted on us doing. We ignored what was happening around us. We let them just sit back, regroup, and quietly, or not so quietly, take over. Today we have a black so-called progressive president. Obama's actually outdone his predecessor in terms of keeping the killing and the lies and the wars going strong. Before that, we had frowny, smile-faced Junior Bush. He was probably in on the false flag 9/11 attack on our own country that helped fuel the craziness and the wars created, fought all over the world. He was instrumental in helping to turn a disaster hurricane into a chance to get rid of the poor black people in New Orleans. And he was probably the most blatant example of somebody not even elected getting to act as the figurehead for the USA. So it's one Dem, one Repub. It hardly matters what party these folks come from anymore. What they're really up to is preserving their own money, their own power, and keeping the rest of us truly at their mercy. And we let this happen because we were afraid. And we have very good reasons to be afraid. This fascist police state we've allowed to rise in our midst, and it's a scary thing, but we can't afford to be afraid. It's time for us to get out there and make a difference again. Occupy might be a start, but it's not enough. We have to get involved, each and every one of us. We have to make something different happen. If we don't change what we do, then we can't expect anything different to happen. It has to start from us, from inside each of us. We shall overcome someday. I'm Chuck Gregory. This is the New American Dream Radio Show. Now I'm going to play some remarks from Bill Hicks.
It's just a ride. And we can change it anytime we want. It's only a choice. No effort, no work, no job, no savings of money. A choice right now between fear and love. The eyes of fear want you to put bigger locks on your door, buy guns, close yourself off. The eyes of love instead see all of us as one. Here's what we can do to change the world right now, to a better ride. Take all that money we spend on weapons and defense each year and instead spend it feeding, clothing, and educating the poor of the world, which it would many times over, not one human being excluded, and we can explore space together, both inner and outer, forever in peace.
And now, coming to you live from Fort Lauderdale, Florida, in Duluth, Minnesota, Dreaming the New American Dream, with your hosts, Chuck Gregory and Mike Pelichek.
It's just a ride.
And now, my friend and co-host, Mike Pelichek, an American writer.
Thank you, Chuck. Tonight we welcome Lee Herrick back to the show. She's been with us several times. Lee is a poet living in Minneapolis, and we welcome a new guest, Yvette McShann. I think she will be talking to us from the San Francisco Bay Area. So tonight we're coming to you folks from Duluth, Fort Lauderdale, Minneapolis, and Southern California. Here in the United States, we're often brought up and told we don't have propaganda, that we have a hard-charging investigative press. We're told that we have this educated, skeptical, even cynical citizenry, and that if there were powerful interests trying to manage or manipulate public opinion, they would be exposed. The reality actually is just the opposite. Academics like Al Carey and others who spent their lifetimes looking at how propaganda works finds that it's actually in Western democracies and open societies where you need the most sophisticated sorts of propaganda. And since World War I, thanks to people like Ivy Lee and Eddie Bernays, propaganda has become a business, this business of public relations. Throngs of Iraqis spontaneously attack a statue of Saddam Hussein, the face obscured with old glory. Later, the stars and stripes are replaced with red, white, and black, symbolizing the transference of power from the liberators to the liberated. Defense Secretary Donald Rumsfeld describes the scenes as breathtaking. To the British Army, they're historic. BBC Radio calls them amazing, and they were, because the entire event was staged. Years after the operation, a U.S. Army report admitted that the toppling of the Saddam statue had been engineered by a psychological operations group. The document states, "Our TPT, or Tactical PSYOP team, saw the statue as a target of opportunity." A week earlier, another psychological operation laid the groundwork for what followed. The script was for a female Rambo turned damsel in distress to be rescued by U.S. armed forces. In the situation that we're talking about here with Private Lynch, as you know, on about the 23rd of March, her 507th maintenance company was ambushed. A number of the members of that maintenance company were killed. A number were captured, and a number were unaccounted for, she being one of them. They waited 24 hours to get the cameras there, to set up the whole thing to make this big rescue, and the SWAT team goes in to save her, and then she becomes an instant celebrity overnight. That story happened on the same day that the tanks were rolling into Baghdad. That's the same day that we shelled the Palestine Hotel where the independent journalists were. The same day we blew up Al Jazeera's television station and killed one of their journalists. All we're getting on the front pages of the papers and in the news is the rescue of Jessica Lynch. So that was a PR substitute story. Toppling the Saddam statue, they got Chalabi's group. The Rendon Group had actually formed them. The CIA paid the Rendon Group to form the Iraqi Congress as a countergroup to Saddam Hussein, and they were based here in the U.S. Then they flew over there, and they shipped them into Iraq. They were the ones that were standing around the statue as a tank was used to pull it over. The Rendon Group had been around. He worked for George W.'s father, and he worked for Clinton, too. His firm, he used to be a public relations press guy for Carter, and he created a PR firm that specialized in war. The head of the Rendon Group, John Rendon, denies that he is a national security strategist or a military tactician. Rather, he states, "I'm a politician and a person who uses communication to meet public policy or corporate policy objectives. In fact, I am an information warrior and a perception manager. Following the first Gulf War, Rendon was paid $23 million by the CIA to create anti-Saddam propaganda. Following 9/11, he was charged with public relations for the U.S. bombing of Afghanistan. Rendon is far from alone. Public relations has mushroomed into a $200 billion a year industry, with PR flacks in the United States now outnumbering journalists. Propaganda has become the primary means by which the wealthy communicate with the rest of society. Whether selling a product or a political candidate, a law or a war, seldom do the powerful deliver messages to the public before consulting their colleagues in the public relations industry. You see a news show, you watch 60 Minutes or a Fox program or whatever it is. You tend to give more credibility to what you're told is journalism. If an advertisement comes on, hopefully you tend to be more skeptical of that, obviously. Somebody put an awful lot of work and money into crafting this slick TV ad and airing it. But you probably never suspect that the news story you just watched was also crafted by a company, given to the TV station or network with the understanding that they would put their own logos on it, identify it as real journalism, and air it. That was from PsyWars, P-S-Y Wars, by Scott Noble. It's about the evolution of propaganda and public relations in the U.S. And to view the whole documentary, I would go to YouTube or Google PsyWars Scott Noble, N-O-B-L-E, or Metanoia Films. And that's one of the reasons that we're here at the New American Dream, is to try and counter that. We have to do this homemade journalism because there's so much out there that is not journalism that is having such a big impact on our country. There is actually a they out there, and there is actually you and a me, and together we are we. They,
hi, this is Lee.
Bush, Obama, Clinton, and company want us to be afraid, as they told us in the anthrax letters in 2001. We can do this, but we cannot be afraid.
The New American Dream radio show newsroom has received word that the Homeland Security obscene statue removal team taking part in Operation Bad Guys after they finished the Joe Paterno job at Penn State has now taken their bulldozers and cranes and chains and torches, ropes and dynamite on 6 flatbed trucks and 4 semi-trucks with lead pickup with lights flashing, headed for the other jobs that will need to be completed before the end of the summer. Right now, the caravan is headed for the Ronald Reagan statue at the National Airport in Arlington, Virginia, then on to the George W. Bush statue at Hamilton High School, Hamilton, Ohio. They'll then head on down to the George H.W. Bush Monument in Houston, Texas, then out to Black Hill to the Gerald Ford statue, Rapid City, South Dakota. Plans are underway to take out the Bill Clinton statue in Pristina, Kosovo, and the Barack Obama statue in Jakarta, Indonesia, with drone airplane attacks.
When you go to Walmart, not if, when, you will find those birthday cards in the birthday card section. They tell all about what was happening during the year you were born, the big political events of 1955, the big songs, movies, celebrities. Well, thanks to the U.S. Department of Homeland Security and Walmart, you can also get your FBI file included in your own birthday card. Your card will show who you had dinner with last Tuesday, where you went for vacation last summer, who you texted last Saturday night, and what movies you ordered last month from Netflix, along with photos of who you sat with at McDonald's for coffee this morning. Your FBI file birthday cards from Homeland Security and Walmart. Always low-quality scum suckers. Save your privacy for the graveyard. Live better. Happy birthday. You're not getting older. You're getting safer. You'll never get tired of this, will you? We're Walmart and the U.S. Department of Homeland Security. Our first guest is Lee Herrick. Lee Herrick has been with the show many times. She's a poet in Minneapolis, and she's always got a lot of interesting stuff going on. Lee, are you there?
Yeah, I'm here.
How you doing?
I'm okay.
I'm doing great. Are you Are you at the vet or at home or?
No, I'm at home. I'm kind of waiting. I'll be doing a mad dash here. The dog is he's hanging on for me so that I wouldn't have to try to double duty. But yeah, we'll go as soon as I hang up.
Okay, go for it. Whatever you have for us, go ahead and take it away.
Okay, all right. So I'm just going to do one piece. It's a fairly long piece. I haven't timed it out. I think it's about 9 or 10 minutes. Is that okay?
That is fine. Go for it.
Okay. So this is it's an avant-garde piece, so I hope the audience will get ready for this. It's called In the Expurgation of Mask. And the only footnote is for people to keep in mind the four nucleotide bases of DNA strand are represented by the letters A, C, G, and T. So here we go, In the Expurgation of Mask. Eek, echo, con, logic, et, at all, I see, et, echo, all, logical, et, late, echo, nominal, echo, emptiness, echo, eke, echo, no, missed, all, id, est, be, id, est, echo, isolate, ego, id, est, system, id, est, mysticism, id, est, system, mysticism, id, est, symptom, systematically matriculated, systemically manicured, manically éclaseured, e-ra-sure, matronymically amnesic, metonymically voided, in, ex, here, purgation of mask, covering, concealing, hiding, screening, obscuring, masquerading, mask-making, sculpting of likeness, Halloweening, gargoylishly falsifying, gospelically chaptering, obscurantism, to be sure, vague, ambiguous, unlikely, doubtfully swathed, or plastered, wrapped, cloaked, veiled, shrouded, the image made real, the image imagined, the image coming through, the image alluded to, in the temples of Mark, in the margins of doom, in the hardware of wired, in the money of hours, in the alphabet of due, in the harbors of acronyms, in the rendezvous meeting of the malentendu, the ear of the tongue, the hearing eye, in the malaprop, in the sanctuary of if, in the moan of the damned, in the spit of the hopeless, in the waste of ground, in the fit of fire, in the tireless pour, in the acid and acrid dissipation, in the implode and explode, in the broken and fragmented found, whose future of schoolyards, whose yards of chalk, whose beatific tones in the script of files, in the rampant of cankerous wake, in rancorous running forward ahead, fast gaining, in the convection of pressure, in the oblivion of carbon, in the flux of wave, meal ticket, bone ticket, earth ticket, triptych, before the nothing, after the nothing, before the void, after the void, before the empty, after the emptied, triptych, before the blank, after the blanked, before the contusion, the colors to lose, triptych bruise, triptych, before the vacant, after the vacated, before the Cartesian, after the thought, before the context, after the stage, triptych, before the background, after the play, before the monologue, after soliloquizing, a flourishing lack in marshalling the purple wounds, triptych, before the question, after debate, before the river, after the ice, before the flower, after the bed, triptych, before the dust, after the star, before the lit, after the snuffed, before academies exacting institutes of errancy, triptych, before the spirits, after the idols, before the gods, after the parents, before the pinups, after the heroes, in the reign of country, in the excision of hail, in the egg of, in the hole of, in the iris of, in the arm of, in the umbilical crook, before the electric, after the storm, before the story, after the lie, before the wound, after the sound, before the word, in earth tide, nucleotide, atagata, atakatag, atagata, atakatag, atakataka, kataka, taka, at, tag, 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 taka, taka, gara, taka, gara, 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 taka, takaka, 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 takaka. Aka 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 gaka aka gaka aka aka ka ta taka ta taka ta taka ka ta taka ta taka ka taka ka gaka aga ga ta ka ka ga 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 ka ga ka ga ka ga 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 ka ga ga ka ga ga ka ka ga ta ka ga ta ta ka ga ta ka ta ka ra ta 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 ka ka ga ga ah. After vibration, before the pulse, in the corner of space, in the curve of arc, in the coil of helix, in the spiraled fluidic curl, the float, the drift, the glide, the wing, the fire, the air, the water, the soil, the water, the air in fire. Oxygen is all. In is O, in is O, topic in top, topic in isotope, topical isotropic not note. After the melting, before the strip, after the cannery, before the flint, after the peel, before the shard, after the drop, before the rise, after the plummet, before the fall, before the after, after before, the be, the coming, being, becomes you, that you become, the mask, 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 the fluxing mask, the mask, the mask, the istic mask, real, that becomes you, real, that defines you, real, that you're sure, in the dropped propagation, in the ruinous plan, it is the mask that beholds you, it is the mask that becomes you, that you become what you are, what you would be, what you have always been, in the mask, and masked, beginning to end.
Lee?
Yes.
Thank you very much.
You're welcome.
Can you tell us what's happening with the book from Howling Dog Press?
Well, there was talk that the book would be released in September, so I'm waiting to hear a final word on that. But for all updates, for the time being, people can just please visit my website. I'll have all the information there, and that's leeherrick.com.
Sounds good. How about, do you have anything, any appearances or anything, events you'd like to plug?
I just got done with appearances, so I don't have anything upcoming right now, but we were just at the Minnesota Music Cafe performing last night, so that was pretty awesome. I was pretty happy about that. So I don't have anything right exactly now, but again, people should just keep going back to my website to be updated, or Facebook.
Okay. Sounds good. Thank you very much, and we look forward to talking to you again soon.
Okay. Thanks a lot, Mike.
Yep, have a good night.
Good night. Bye-bye.
This here, Elmer Fudd, chairman of the Democratic Party. Americans are about to elect a new president. It will be either crazy Republican or a crazy CIA agent president. They would be liberalized and progressive, just screaming and hollering how we should elect the CIA president again. They would say he did not bomb Afghanistan, you drones to kill people. But he did. Hey, Tamwaz, he did not protect the real perpetrators of 9/11. Well, he did. They would say you are crazy conspiracy theorists. Think that. They would say, don't worry. Don't worry what really happened. They would say, vote for the Democratic Party. They are full of people, but not crazy. Remember, we approach election season. All good people for both the liberals and progressive, don't worry about any conspiracy theory. Don't worry what really happened. Don't worry. We Democratic Party.
The United States is not a police state. And you would be a fat communist soccer lover wearing lederhosen and a tiny Bavarian hat with a feather and tight jacket and knee socks with buckle shoes who does not fit in with the rest of the family at Thanksgiving dinner if you thought so. There are not police everywhere. You do not have to go where the police put you in order to hold your sign and have your freedom of speech like a Bolshevik perched atop a potato crate. This is America. There are not thousands and thousands of people making their living off of the war on terror and Homeland Security, the Border Patrol, the U.S. Army. The airport box cutter shampoo bazooka up the wazoo finder guys. The video game industry, the bullet industry, the casket and handcuff and easy bake oven secret spy camera industrial complex. It's just not a police state. Police are not shock troops protecting the rich against the poor. It's not. It's not. Say it.
Our second guest tonight is Yvette McShann. She was the co-founder of a group called Victorious Black Women. The group strives to create and promote culturally responsive peer recovery and support services, self-help tools and techniques for African American consumers, communities, and family members. The group represents a diverse array of backgrounds, cultures, and experience. They're united by a shared history of and recovery from various mental health challenges. And we're very lucky to have Yvette joining us tonight. Yvette, welcome to the New American Dream Radio Show.
Having me. It's a pleasure and an honor for being on your radio station. My name is Yvette McShann. I'm founder of the Victorious Black Woman. I'm a consumer and a provider who has experienced mental health challenges along with heroin addiction for many years. With no capability of accessing education, employment, housing, social connection that attribute to my quality of life as an addict. I've learned to utilize mental health services and have over several personal experiences of stigma, discrimination, of social inclusion, being diagnosed with schizophrenia, along with several years of medication therapy, along with my deep faith in Jesus Christ, I am able to live independently today, having advanced to higher education from menial education, taking control of my mental and physical issues along with my drug addiction lifestyle to save self-hatred inherit from a dysfunctional family upbringing to sustain a living a victorious life, which enables me to protect, which enables me to form a project soon, which enabled me to form a project.
Okay. I think the project that you have come up with is a direct response from what you have been through, and I hope you'll tell us a little bit about how it works, how you're actually going out there and helping people, and who you're helping.
Right. I'm helping consumers as myself with mental illness and drug addiction. I'm a mentor for John George Psychiatric Hospital, mentoring clients that leaves the exiting the hospital. Victoria's Black Woman was formed from California Network. I was the executive board of director there, and I asked the director at that time, what could I do to outreach to people that look like me? So she told me to do it. So I started, the idea came from a project called African American Task Force, where we did various presentations. It evolved to Victoria's Black Women, which is for African American women who are consumer providers that's living victoriously today. And
okay.
We do this.
Are you in the Bay Area? Is that where you are? I know you're in California somewhere.
Yes, I'm in the Bay Area, Alameda County.
Okay.
But we speak all over. We have been to the alternatives in Orlando last year, and we intend to go this year. We have did regional forums and various presentations. We have a presentation for NAMI on the 18th of this month,
mm-hmm.
next week. And basically, we tell our wellness and recovery story of us living victoriously to death. And we'll try to share our message of telling our stories. If we could use service providers and determine to live a victorious life, others can too. Because
when I spoke with you earlier, you shared with me a wonderful story of a turnaround in your own life from the dysfunctional family you grew up in to something that is quite different today. Can you tell us about that?
Yes, I grew up in a home which society would say is a middle class home, which society would say is okay. But at the age of 13, I left because of this dysfunction in the home of verbal abuse and physical abuse. And my mother and father taught me morals. They taught me about my faith. And that's one of the reasons I stand today. And another reason I started this project is because I see why a lot of people fell by the wayside, and I'm still here today. And I believe that's due to my faith in God and my family structure. Even though they was dysfunctional, they loved me. And I didn't realize that love, how strong that love was as a child. I just felt like it wasn't right. And at the age of 13, I left for the streets, and I did I've been to every prison in California, and then out of juvenile halls, and I was put in a group home. It's not really a group home, but a private school. The court had told my family if they didn't put me in a private school that they was going to make me a ward of court. At that time, I was 14, and I went there in September, but I had got pregnant in August. And being that I was pregnant and not taking care of myself, and like when I was about 5 months pregnant, I had got real sick. And being that my mother is my legal guardian, school had to notify my mother so I could get medical services because they had rushed me to the hospital. And at that time, my mother had told me that I should have my first child, which I did. But it was basically a relief for me because I thought she was going to kill me for being pregnant because that's what I was taught. But she didn't. And in that, I have a child who graduated from San Diego State. Not that I was a good parent, but that my mother raised her and my father and my grandmother and my family structure. And that's why I believe so strongly in change of the African-American family structure and building that back up like it used to be. As when I was growing up, our neighbors cared about one another. And mm-hmm. being in the African-American culture, you knew your auntie and grandmother and great-grandmother because you interacted with them. And it's different today. We have children raising children. And, you know, you have to be, I think that comes from your family structure. You have to be taught how to live right, how to be morally and have good character and to respect one another. I think that comes from the home. And the reason I say that, even though I lived a destructive life, I still had morals and character about myself. I just chose to do the wrong things because I guess I was looking for love in the wrong places. But with that come maturity. I became a woman, and I wanted to live right. And living right meant going to work, educating myself, and having a home, being a homeowner and a business owner, like I've seen in my family. And that's another reason that I started Victorious Black Women, because I have a strong desire for the African-American family structure, putting it back together.
Have you do you interact with individual families with specific women, or is it more of?
I have been a counselor for. I have been a counselor for abused women of drugs and from their spouses. I was working at Shelters Gates, which is an organization for abused women, and my job there was to keep their children, and that's what I did. I ran groups, and I ran parenting classes. I took care of their children. I did a various substance abuse groups, and yes.
Do you find that the support structure and the the counseling and this is at least as important as the programs of medication?
Program. When you say programs of medication, what do you mean?
Sometimes there's been a conflict in the mental health community between people who favor medication as the solution to everything and people who think medication only goes so far. What you have to do is convince people to help themselves or teach them to help themselves.
Well, I believe it's individual thing. It's what the individual need. I mean, it was the time that I needed medication, and today I don't. I believe that if I didn't have that medication, I wouldn't be the woman I am today. You know, I believe that is up to the individual. I believe that is up to the individual, but I do believe that a provider needs to listen to the consumer to see what the consumer wants and advise them. If the consumer feel like they don't need medication, I feel like they should have an alternative. It was a time that I felt like I didn't need medication no more, and my provider was all right with that.
Uh-huh.
And, you know, I'm a part of a consumer-ran organizations today. And, you know, I think that's a difference of opinion. I don't think we should have to fight one another about it. I think we should come together. What's good for one may not be good for the other. I don't believe in forced treatment, totally. But, yes, I believe in medication, and I would never tell nobody they shouldn't take medication.
Uh-huh.
I think we take things to the extremes because our own personal beliefs and what we experience. But what we experience, the next person, it may not be good for that person.
Okay.
That's why you should have a choice. I think we as advocates, we should come together instead of fight. Because, you know, as long as we in disagreement, we'll be in standstill and we can't move forward. And
yeah, that's
right.
I think that's true in all communities, really, that we all have to try to work together. I'm afraid we've run out of time, Yvette, but I really appreciate your joining us on the show and telling us your story. I wish you all the very best with the Victorious Black Women and with your own victories.
Thank you. And I wish
thanks
you
for
the
joining
same.
Us.
It's a pleasure for you having me. And you have a blessed evening.
Okay, you have a good night. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
Fallujah, Guernica, Libya, Bosnia, North Vietnam, Kandahar, Baghdad, Dresden, Hiroshima. It just goes on and on. Shock and awe, just cause, Operation Iraqi Freedom. The war to end all wars, be all you can be. The United States Air Force, a global force for good. The land of the free and the home of the brave. Fighter jets streaking over the stadium. Mary had a little lamb. It just goes on and on. Whose fleece was white as snow. Just goes on and on. And everywhere that Mary went, the lamb was sure to go, making no sense whatsoever.
New from your Democratic Party National Headquarters. This country needs change. Poverty and unemployment are at an all-time high.
More Americans than ever are in prison. More Americans cannot afford adequate health care. It's not that there isn't enough wealth in this country. It's that it's in the wrong hands. Who will light the fire for the new American Revolution? What Bastille will we storm? Who will light themselves on fire? What new giant rallies will be held for workers' rights? Where should we meet? On the docks? In the labor hall? At Marion Federal Prison? Dick Cheney's house? George Bush's house? Huh? Nah, don't be ridiculous. We're the Democratic Party.
Now available online. Everything I learned in kindergarten is all I ever learned. New in a 9-disc package. We guarantee you will learn how to speak American. At the end of the day, stay on the same page. Take it to the next level. Keep it real. Be awesome and give 110%. Be on time. Work hard. Work 9 jobs. Keep your head down. Keep your mouth shut. Stand for the anthem and the flag. Watch the game in the living room after the big meal. Keep your mouth shut about anything that matters. But if you order today, a bonus package is available online from How to Become a Human Being. You will learn such useful phrases as stick it up your ass, eat me, I quit. Also including additional lessons such as football is so stupid, wrestling is so stupid, NASCAR is so stupid, and more bonus coverage, golf is really stupid. Order now.
This public service announcement from the county commissioners. Your county fair board is now looking for volunteers for the new water board tank to be used this year as a fundraiser for Head Start, health care, bridge repair, pothole filling, teacher salaries, and the food shelf. Members of the National Guard, VFW, Police Department, Sheriff's Department, Republican and Democratic parties are encouraged to pop in and sign up. Oh, just in. This text message from the rest of the world to America. Your blinker is on.
Well, it's been another long week in Mount Liberty, Nebraska, my hometown. Everyone has that Olympic theme music stuck in their heads, and the guys at the cafe are starting to think about the next Olympics, how they might like to walk into a big stadium on TV and everyone cheering and not caring if you made the 7th grade baseball team or got minor in possession 3 times in the summer of 75. What they're thinking is either horse dancing or luge. Then they're going to need a horse or a luge and a hill, and somebody to give a guy a push to get started. Well, soon school will be started, and the bitching about school teacher salaries will likely douse this Olympic flame. Well, the flags are at half staff at the post office and Bueller Chevrolet and the high school and also Taco John's to commemorate and celebrate the burial at sea of Cruella de Vil, the Wicked Witch of the West, also buried at sea, as well as Captain Hook, buried at sea, and the Big Bad Wolf, buried at sea. No one is thinking yet of the 11th anniversary of 9/11. They are thinking about school supply lists. But on Labor Day, when all the pools will be closed and all the schools will be open, and we will not be able to believe where the summer has gone, people will begin to remember. And then as they attach their American flags across their windshields with duct tape, they will talk about the legend of Jesus Liberty, the terrorist. It was a big story back in the day, not that long ago, terrible times. And no one knows, except maybe old Mr. Lewis, whether the times ever got better, got worse, or whether we just got used to terrible.
Someone was killing the Democrats of Orange County, Nebraska. I wouldn't have cared, but, well, I was a Democrat. I did not much care to have my throat slit as I pulled into the garage or have my brakes fail so I'd plow headlong into the concrete culvert out on the bypass around the curb by the new Taco John's, have my head split like a good watermelon or a 50-pound sack of sugar fall on my neck from the top shelf as I bent down to try to read the label on the All Brand with my trifocals.
prime suspect was Jesus Liberty, the terrorist. Jesus lived here in Ace County somewhere on the back streets or soft dirt roads or in the cornfields. Who knows? Who cares? Might have seen him once. In a blur, very early morning, out the front window of my auto parts store. Who cares? Well, maybe the Democrats. Maybe me. You can buy a list of all the registered Democrats from the Secretary of State in Lincoln. I did that once. I used it to get signatures to get on the ballot. Suppose you could also use it for selling Albrand or, well, maybe mass murder. To me, well, I wouldn't go to the trouble. Democrats are dying anyway.
Jesus Liberty got his name when his family was driving up from Oaxaca. His father and mother were illegal. He was illegal too. Illegal people. His mother was pregnant in labor. They needed to find a hospital right away. They passed a woman mowing the front yard of a farm home on a green riding mower, not wearing a top. She had long blonde hair and wore only jean shorts, no shoes, bright red toenail polish. The father got all the detail because they were going 45 on the highway, not wanting to have anything to do with the county deputies. The woman went over some bumps in the lawn, held on, looked right at the father, and smiled and waved. He recalled that at that particular moment, her hair rose from her shoulders, suspended in midair with waves, like on the American commercials they had seen from home. Perhaps just what he had dreamed of when he thought of America, perhaps miraculous, though he kept that suspicion to himself. When the father saw the blonde woman, he proclaimed, "Dios mío, liberty!" And when Jesus was born in the county hospital 20 minutes later, the father wanted to memorialize the vision he had been given. The mother argued they could not name the son "My God," so the father agreed on Jesus and tacked on Liberty as a middle name because that was how it truly had occurred. And they wanted it to sound as if the young boy was from around here. The father and mother and the nurses had bickered about the comma, Mr. and Mrs. having spent many recent weeks studying English and having a fervor of the nouveau literate. And for 2 days, the name of the young boy was Jesus, comma, Liberty Hernandez. On the third day, the comma was dropped.
The mother and father opened a restaurant, worked all day, every day, bought a home on the west side. Jesus grew strong and happy and played shortstop and quarterback. He was famous, known around town as Jesus Liberty. Just as the Omaha World Herald headline on the Sunday sports page, after Jesus was named the high school athlete of the year and only his junior year, he planned to attend the University of Nebraska, study architecture, build tall buildings in Grand Island in San Francisco and Mexico City, be the first Hispanic quarterback ever, first Hispanic Nebraskan elected to the United States House of Representatives. His room was packed with the biography of Frank Lloyd Wright and other great American designers, Thomas E. Walter in the U.S. Capitol Building, James Hoban's White House, Henry Bacon in the Lincoln Memorial, Robert Mills in the Washington Memorial, and Russell Pope's Jefferson Memorial. In the family's photo album, he saw pictures of the modest hovels of Oaxaca, compared them to the homes he saw in America. His father and mother were able to move the family to a house on Madison Street, and Jesus spent hours sitting on the front porch watching people go past, waving and smiling. So often, they did not respond positively. What he really wanted to do was make houses like those in America for his relatives in Mexico, or bring those relatives up here to live in nice places. Or, well, maybe play shortstop for the New York Yankees. Each day, his dreams and plans were different, bigger, larger, more grand and beautiful. The high school did not offer architecture classes, but Mr. Myers, the shop teacher, gave Jesus books on construction, bricklaying, carpentry, steel beam structures, the building of the Hoover Dam and the World Trade Center, Yankee Stadium, and the St. Louis Arch.
Jesus Liberty stopped going to classes after the first week of his senior year. Mrs. Langford, the history teacher, pulled a television into the room on September 11, 2001, so her classes could watch the continuing coverage. Jesus sat in the front desk of the second row from the door and watched CNN all morning. He watched through his class and skipped biology and geometry, too, to watch more. He got up when Langford locked her room for lunch. Jesus Liberty dropped his books in his locker, walked through the cafeteria without talking to anyone, went out the front door with the rest of the privileged open campus seniors, and never came back. He sent a letter to the editor, to the paper from somewhere, and the editor wouldn't print it, is what I heard. Said it didn't have a local address.
Jesus Liberty had left that classroom on 9/11. And walked across the front yard and parking lot to the baseball field to sit in the visitor's dugout. That's what I learned later. I heard that's when he wrote that letter to the editor that the old editor refused to print. He left his books in the dugout and he walked across town. He walked into the friendly cafe and sat at one of the tables like a regular customer. His mother came out to ask why he wasn't at school. He nodded at the TV high in the corner behind the front counter at the images replayed of the towers coming down. Controlled demolition, he said dejectedly. His mother brought him a chicken enchilada and rice with a cherry Coke in his special class. Maria sat with her son and silently watched him eat and look up at the television. They stared deep into each other's eyes, knowing their world had changed forever. The mother knew because she had never seen her son quite like this before. Jesus Liberty knew because he had never understood before. He talked with his parents late at night around the tables after the customers had gone home. With colorful blankets covering the front window, which the town cop could not see through unless he were to park his car and get out, which he wouldn't do in a million years. The parents tried to get Jesus to go back to school to finish his education, but Jesus knew he'd already learned too much. He'd already taken all of his architecture textbooks and biographies and set them by the front door of the restaurant for Mr. Myers to find when he came for lunch on a Wednesday.
Jesus thought of people in town he could talk to. He watched the TV and listened to the news reporters prepare the people for war. He saw the yellow ribbons and stickers on the vehicles around town. The family did not answer the phone calls from school. They hid Jesus like a dissident when the principal, Mrs. Sample, came to the restaurant to ask about Jesus. Jesus spent his days thinking and watching CNN and eating too many ho-hos. His father would hide him in the back seat of the car and take Jesus and his dog, Gypsy, out to the county park in the country so that Jesus could get out of the house and walk and be away from the TV. One day, Jesus came downstairs for breakfast and said he was going to hold a sign downtown. "I'm going to do it," he said, "for God, for country, for honor, just like on TV. I'm going to fight for my country, die if I must, like a dirty dog in the street with my tongue and guts hanging out. No, mijo." His mother shrieked and put both her hands to her mouth. His father smirked and then became serious. "You cannot stop what is happening, what is going to happen," said his father. Jesus gritted his teeth and became angry in an instant. His father put up a hand. Jesus sat down. "Go away," said the father, trying not to cry. "You must go away." He put up his hand again to stop the mother's protests. "Go to Mexico City, Oaxaca, Chiapas. See your people. See where you came from. That is where you were conceived, mijo. This is not your country. We were wrong to bring you here. We thought it would be better. He put his chin to his chest and sobbed. Jesus sat in silence as his parents prepared for bed. He sat out on the porch thinking, ready to leap the railing if a police car came down Madison Street. The next morning when his parents came out for coffee, Jesus had a Yankees gym bag by the door. His parents helped him with a list of relatives and a map, then hid him in the back seat for the drive to the bus depot in Mount Carl. They had coffee and split a sweet roll in a booth at Casey's before he left, never to return. And that's the news from Mount Liberty, where all the soldiers are thugs, all the Democrats are cowards, and all the Homeland Security part-time summer help bounty hunters are about average.
And that wraps up this edition of the New American Dream Radio Show. We thank you all for joining us, and we hope you'll join us again, same time, same place next week. We'd like to thank various people that sponsor, help us to put our show on. TheSpiritualUN.org, WorldNewsTrust.com, and June2508.com. I'd like to thank my co-host, Mike Palachek, for the great job he does preparing these scripts for us week after week. All I have to do is read. Well, I'd like to thank you, and good night, Mike.
Good night, Chuck. Stay warm down there. And good night, Mrs. Calabash. Good night, Todd Beamer. And good night, Barbara Olson, wherever you are.
Oh.